Alone in the dark in the stone cell that was his sleeping room, Aaron lay with eyes open. He had slept on a bed all his life, under soft furs. Even in the 20-oared galley in which he had come from Enlad, they had provided their young prince with more comfort than this. A straw pallet on the stone floor and a ragged blanket of felt. But he noticed none of it. I am at the center of the world, he thought. The masters are talking in the holy place. What will they do? Will they weave a great magic to save magic? Can it be true that wizardry is dying out of the world? Is there a danger that threatens even Roke? I will stay here. I will not go home. I would rather sweep his room than be a prince in Enlad. Would he let me stay as a novice? But perhaps there will be no more teaching of the art magic, no more learning of the true names of things. My father has the gift of wizardry, but I do not. Perhaps it is indeed dying out of the world. Yet I would stay near him, even if he lost his power and his art, even if I never saw him, even if he never said another word to me. But his ardent imagination swept him on past that, so that in a moment he saw himself face to face with the Archmage once more in the court beneath the rowan tree, and the sky was dark, and the tree leafless, and the fountain silent. And he said, My lord, the storm is on us, yet I will stay by thee and serve thee. And the Archmage smiled at him. But there imagination failed, for he had not seen that dark face smile. In the morning he rose, feeling that yesterday he had been a boy, today he was a man. He was ready for anything. But when it came, he stood gaping. "The Archmage wishes to speak to you, Prince Aaron," said a little novice lad at his doorway, who waited a moment and ran off before Aaron could collect his wits to answer. He made his way down the tower staircase and through stone corridors toward the fountain court, not knowing where he should go. An old man met him in the corridor, smiling so that deep furrows ran down his cheeks from nose to chin, the same who had met him yesterday at the door of the great house when he first came up from the harbor and had required him to say his true name before he entered. "Come this way," said the master doorkeeper. The halls and passages in this part of the building were silent, empty of the rush and racket of the boys that enlivened the rest. Here one felt the great age of the walls. The enchantment with which the ancient stones were laid and protected was here palpable. Runes were graven on the walls at intervals, cut deep, some inlaid with silver. Aaron had learned the runes of Hardik from his father, but none of these did he know, though certain of them seemed to hold a meaning that he almost knew, or had known, and could not quite remember. "Here you are, lad," said the doorkeeper, who made no account of titles such as lord or prince. Aaron followed him into a long, low-beamed room, where on one side a fire burnt in a stone hearth, its flames reflecting in the oaken floor, and on the other side pointed windows let in the cold, soft light of fog. Before the hearth stood a group of men. All looked at him as he entered, but among them he saw only one— the Archmage. He stopped and bowed and stood dumb. "These are the masters of Roke, Aaron," said the Archmage. "Seven of the nine. The patterner will not leave his grove, and the namer is in his tower, 30 miles to the north. All of them know your errand here. My lords, this is the son of Morad." No pride roused in Aaron at that phrase, but only a kind of dread. He was proud of his lineage, but thought of himself only as an heir of princes, one of the House of Enlad. Morad, from whom that house descended, had been dead 2,000 years. His deeds were matter of legends, not of this present world. It was as if the Archmage had named him Son of Myth, Inheritor of Dreams. He did not dare look up at the faces of the 8 mages. He stared at the iron-shod foot of the Archmage's staff and felt the blood ringing in his ears. "Come, let us breakfast together," said the Archmage, and led them to a table set beneath the windows. There was milk and sour beer, bread, new butter, and cheese. Arryn sat with them and ate. He had been among noblemen, landholders, rich merchants all his life. His father's hall in Barilla was full of them, men who owned much, who bought and sold much, who were rich in the things of the world. They ate meat and drank wine and talked loudly. Many disputed, many flattered, most sought something for themselves. Young as he was, Arryn had learned a good deal about the manners and disguises of humanity, but he had never been among such men as these. They ate bread and talked little, and their faces were quiet. If they sought something, it was not for themselves. Yet they were men of great power. That, too, Arryn recognized. Sparrowhawk, the Archmage, sat at the head of the table and seemed to listen to what was said, and yet there was a silence about him, and no one spoke to him. Arryn was let alone also, so that he had time to recover himself. On his left was the doorkeeper, and on his right a gray-haired man with a kindly look, who said to him at last, "We are coming."